Good morning. Gemach Sima Tova. Guten Erev Shabbos. Last class, we began discussing the question of how is it that at certain places throughout Tanakh, we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to limit human beings' Bechira Chafshis, their free will. The Rambam, we saw, champions the notion of Bechira. Free will is the basis for all religion, and yet there are numerous psukim, not just in the case of Paro, but in the case of Og, in the case of all of Klal Yisrael at times, where Paro seems to remove the freedom from the people. So, excuse me. So how do we explain that? So we began by seeing the approach of the Rambam, and the Rambam answered that there are times that a person or a community can sin in such an egregious manner that as a punishment for their sins, they lose their free will so that they can be punished here on this world without the opportunity to do tshuva. Tshuva is a gift, it's an opportunity, and it could be removed. We suggested that at the very least in the case of Paro, this might be Mida Keneged Mida. He did not take advantage of his free will by allowing the Jewish people to go during the first five Makos before his heart was hardened. And thus, he is punished by a loss of free will. We further suggested that perhaps you could use the Radvaz that we saw last week to explain this in a more naturalistic manner. Namely, that freedom is something that's not necessarily natural, but it's an opportunity, something that could be utilized, but it doesn't come automatically. A person has the freedom to overcome their teva, but naturally, they do have a certain nature. And perhaps according to that, you could understand that at a certain point in time, a person becomes so entrenched in their ways that they have no ability, or at least feel that they have no ability, to turn around anymore. And that's what happened to Paro. He kept on saying, no, 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 no. Well, at that point, he couldn't turn around. We also saw another approach that suggested that leaders are different, kings are different, but based on the Pasuk in Mishle, that either because it would be too dangerous to leave freedom to the hands of kings where their decisions affect thousands of people, or because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain purpose and goal in direction in history, and therefore needs to bring the events and carry them and allow them to happen as he wishes, and therefore when it comes to kings, at least in a certain sense, their freedom is limited. This brings us to the Ramban. And the Ramban is on page 43. If anyone needs, there are a couple of packets up here if you don't forgot yours. The right column. The Ramban asks this question, and he says, there are two answers to this question, Vishneyam Emes. They're both true. The first answer that he quotes is the Rambam. We're going to start from the second. Vatam Hasheni, in the bold bottom right of the page, ki hayu chatzi amakos alav bepisho, ki lo ne'amar bahen rak vayichazek leif paro, vayichabed paro eslibo, hine, lo ratza l'shalcham l'chvod Hashem. Aval kasher gavru amakos alav v'nila lisbolosam, rach lirbo, v'haya nimlach l'shalcham mikoved hamakos, lo lasos ritzon baro. The Az, Hiksha Hashem Esrucho, Vimeitzes Levavo, Leman Seper Shemo, Kinyan Shekasu Vizgadalti, Vizgadashti, Vinodati, Leine Goyim Rabim Vigomer. So the Ramban says a fascinating insight. And there's really two parts to this answer. The first part is that Paro, for the first five Makos, maintained his freedom. However, he was being overwhelmed. The pressure of the Makos were too strong and too powerful to continue to withstand. And thus, he was going to allow the Jewish people to go, not because he really wanted to, but rather because of the pressure. And this raises an interesting question, which is that considered an act of freedom or an act of coercion? If I go ahead and I squeeze your arm and I say, say uncle, and you really don't want to say uncle, and I twist and I twist and I twist, so at a certain point in time, you're going to say uncle. You don't want to, right? You decided I'm not going to say. But the pain is so much, so extreme, that you don't really feel like you have a choice. You feel like you're forced to do something that you can't. Now, in theory, you still have the freedom to not say it. You can experience the pain. But from your perception, and this is a reality that halacha acknowledges, this was an act that's coerced. It's not an act of freedom. Ones rachmana patre. Perhaps this relates to the famous chakira in the Achronim, Rav Elchanan, is ones not a maisa, or is it a p'tur onshin? But that's essentially what the Ramban is saying. So Paro was going to allow the Jewish people to leave, mikoved amakos, not because he wanted to allow them to go, but because of the pain. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the strength to do what he really wanted to do. And what was it that he really wanted to do? He wanted to keep the Jews. He wanted to do the wrong thing. He didn't want to listen to the Tzivoy of Hashem. And thus, we could see the hardening of his heart as giving him the free will, in a certain sense, giving him the opportunity to do what he really wanted. It's almost like giving him anesthesia. He was able to not feel, not experience the pain, and therefore make the choice that he really wanted to. Thus, the Ramban in many ways is flipping the question on its head. Our question was, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu take away his free will? The answer is on the contrary. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him free will. He gave him the opportunity to go ahead and make the decision freely to do what he really wanted to do. That's part one of the answer. And the Lashon of the Pesukim, by the way, is very meduyak, because it says, Vayichazek Hashem es libo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the word gave him the strength, right? Gave him the strength to make the decision he wanted to do, gave him free will. However, that is true, but the Ramban takes this idea a step further and reveals a very important insight about the nature of freedom. Ramban actually says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a purpose in bringing the Makos. And the purpose of the Makos was in order to reveal his existence to the world. In fact, this is explicit in the Pesukim. The Pesukim before the first three Makos say, Laman Tedun Ki Ani Hashem. Moshe tells Paro that the reason for these Makos is to bring awareness to the world that God exists. I think before the next three makos, it says, Leman Tedun Ki Ani Hashem Bekarav Haaretz, that God is not just God of the heavens, but he's God of the world, that there's Hashkacha and the like. Before the first, third three makos, it says, Leman Tedun Ki Ein Kamoni Bekarav Haaretz, that there is no other power besides me. So the makos are meant to show these Ikare Yamuna. That was the purpose. That's why the Ramban says time and time again that the mitzvos of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why are there so many mitzvos commemorating Yetzias Mitzrayim? Because that, in a certain sense, is the basis of our emunah. It showed the world conclusively that God existed. Now, that being the case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had that planned, and he had that agenda, and that had to happen. But it could have happened in one of two ways. That Kiddush Hashem could have happened either through Paro saying no, and Hashem doing these miracles, which eventually caused Paro to allow the Jewish people to go, or that could have happened by bringing the Makos and Paro saying, wow, look, I see Hashem Hu HaElokim, and I have to listen to what he's saying, and therefore I'm going to free the Jews. Both of those options would have led to a fulfillment of the Ratzon Hashem, of the plan. Paro, therefore, had the choice. He didn't have the choice in the sense that either way there was going to be this Kiddush Hashem. But he had the choice as to how this Kiddush Hashem was going to take place. Was it going to take place through him, by him saying Hashem Elokim, and you could go? Or was it going to take place by him saying no, 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 and mach after mach after mach? Therefore, he maintained the freedom. But what didn't he have the choice? He didn't have the choice to say no, but then allow the Jewish people to go mikovid amakos after the sixth plague. Because that would not have brought about this Kiddush Hashem that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to bring out. And this is a subtle point in the Ramban. In fact, when I first learned the Ramban, I didn't notice it. But we'll read the Ramban again, and you'll see what I mean. Fatam Hasheni, ki hayu chati amakos alav v'pisho. So initially, they were free. Hine lo ratzel l'shalcham l'kavod Hashem. What we said, that he didn't want to send them out l'chavod Hashem. Rather, what? He wanted to send them out not l'kavod Hashem, but mikavod amakos. Lo lasos ritzon baro. V'az hikshes rucho. Why? L'man saper shemo. Kenyan shenemar v'skadalti v'skadashtiv no dati le'ne'amim. And in fact, this is very meduyuk in the psukim. Like we said last time, what does it say? Ken yechbarati as slave paro, as slave avadav, leman shisiosos ha'ela b'kirbo, leman tzaper bozne b'ncho, ven b'nchai sashay salalti b'mitzrayim. The purpose of the hardening of the heart was to bring about this Kiddush Hashem. This Kiddush Hashem was going to happen anyway, and the question is how. This is a yesod gadol in terms of understanding the relationship between hashgacha and bechira, and when we get to the topic of hashgacha at the end of the year, we will return to this point. The Radak, also on page 43, proposes a similar suggestion with respect to the Psukim in Sefer Shmuel, where the verses indicate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardened the sons of Eli so as not to do tshuva. So the Radak says, what's the pshat? HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not take away their ability to do sincere tshuva. On the contrary, any time somebody wants to do true and sincere tshuva, they would not only have that opportunity, but they would have siyua eloki, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't take the opportunity away from Paro to do sincere tshuva. Except what was it that the sons of Eli wanted to do? They wanted to do fake tshuva. What were they planning to do? They were going to call a press conference and say, oh, we have such regret and remorse over what we did, and they would shed a tear, and everybody would say, wow, they did tshuva. And of course, they didn't really mean to do tshuva. It wasn't sincere. They were just pressured. And they would continue their evil ways. They would be punished by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And people will say, what? That's not fair. Why are these good people being punished? And that would have led to a chilul Hashem. So therefore, their opportunity, their ability to do fake tshuva was taken away. They fundamentally maintained their freedom. Had they wished to do good, they could have done good. They could have done sincere tshuva. But since they didn't wish to do good, they weren't allowed to do evil in the way that they intended, because that would have had negative consequences. Rather, once they weren't going to do sincere tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away their ability to do fake tshuva. Just like in the case of Paro. Once Paro was not going to do the right thing by allowing the Jewish people to leave l'chvod Hashem, his ability to do the wrong thing, namely refuse but allow the Jewish people to go mikovod amakos, was taken away. The next approach is given by the Akedas Yitzchak on page 44 of Yitzchak Arama. Rav Sadia Gaon says more or less the same thing in Akedas in Emunos Videos. And that's a fascinating interpretation in the sense that it speaks to the fundamental importance of free will. Says Rav Sadia, says the Akedas Yitzchak, it is inconceivable that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away free will, because free will is such a fundamental yesod, as the Rambam said, the basis for all religion, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would never take that away. I, the Psukim, so the yesod is so important that they're willing to interpret the psukim in a extremely dochak way so as to uphold the principle. What does it mean by Chabed Hashem Eslav Paro? It means that the makos were given in such a way so as to allow Paro to maintain his freedom. Meaning to say that had the makos been delivered one after another, blow, 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 dam tzadei akinim, arov, one, without a break, then Paro would have been overwhelmed and essentially forced to allow the Jewish people to leave. So what happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivered the makos with breaks. A makah and then a break for several weeks. And what happened, as we know from the psukim, during the makah, Paro felt overwhelmed. He said, no, you could go, you could leave. Ani van ami arishaim. And then the makos would let up and Paro would change his mind. And again the makah would come and he would relent and the makah would let up and he would change his mind. And that's what it means that Paro hardened, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardened Paro's heart. He did not in any way affect his decision-making process whatsoever. It simply means that he gave the makos in such a way so as to allow him to keep the Jews in his country. The final pshat in this question that I'd like to see is a fascinating idea from the Maral in the Siva Tshuva Perak Aleph on the right column on page 45. This is an important idea, Minyana Dioma, certainly something worthwhile to think about in the days leading up to Yom Kippur. And before going to the Maral, I'd like you to consider an interesting question. I saw not too long ago a study in the journal, the American Association of Psychology journal, the APA. They did a study on New Year's resolutions. And the study basically found that 95% of New Year's resolutions are not maintained. 95%. And the authors of the study were perplexed, because why is it that people keep on trying again and again and again and again and again if they keep on failing again and again and again and again and again? Usually people are rational, they're intelligent. They don't try something that has a failure rate of 95%. And yet, people try and try and try again. So why is that? So the Maral doesn't ask that question, but he answers the question. And the Maral says that to understand why it is that tshuva works, we have to get to a very fundamental consideration of what a human being is. Or to put it differently, who is the real me? If I go ahead and I, on Aseres Yemei Tshuva and Yom Kippur, say, I want to do better, I want to do better, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this. And then, Motzei Yom Kippur, I do that. Or a week after Yom Kippur, 2 weeks after Yom Kippur. So who is the real me? Is the real me the person who wants to do better? The person during the Ilah, during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, saying, I'm going to be different? Or is the real me the one that ends up going back to my old ways? So the Maral writes, start about 5-6 lines down, middle of the line. V'ilu haya adam bal secha legamrei v'chata en hatshuva mo'ila lo ki hatshuva b'shvil shiyomar chatasi v'umischarit al masa v'acharata shayaches la'adam b'meh she'en kol masa v'sichlim. Says the Maral, if a person was sichli lagamre, meaning to say, if a person acted entirely based on his intellect, so then there would be no tshuva. Why? What that means is the following. I go ahead, the 95% of people who go ahead and make the New Year's resolutions, so fundamentally, they are people who want to do what's right. And mitzad sichlam, they understand what's right, and they want to do it. So when I go ahead and I do tshuva on Yom Kippur and on Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and I say I don't want to do this and I don't want to do that and I don't want to do this, that's mitzad sichli. Right? I realize that what's the right thing to do, and I realize that I want to do what's right, and that's what my seichel tells me. So what happens? What happens is that a person is not entirely sichli. They are murkav of a seichel and a guf, of a neshama and a guf. And there's this struggle, which is what ultimately determines the choices that a person makes. Whether you call it the Yetzer HaTov or the Yetzer Hara, whether you call it the neshama and the guf, or the seichel and the guf, the idea is the same, that we're not entirely sichli. And thus, even though I really want to, and I'm 100% sincere when I make these New Year's resolutions, but I will very frequently not fulfill them. At night, I'll set my alarm for 6:10 so I could be in time for slichos. But in the morning, and that's true, if I didn't want to get up at 6:10, I wouldn't have set my alarm. But in the morning, I press snooze. What's the pshat? The pshat is very simple. Mitzad sichli, I want to do something. But at 6:10 in the morning, when I'm half asleep, I'm not acting mitzad sichli. As it were, I'm overcome. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us this matana. And the matana is tshuva. Because he recognizes and he understands that in reality, we are not entirely sichli. If a person was sichli, if a person never made decisions based on his guf, but entirely rationally, so then there would be no makom for tshuva. Because tshuva says, that's not the real me. The real me is the one who wants to do what's right. The real me is the one who wants to get up at 6:10, who wants to be on time for shacharis, who wants to daven with kavana, whatever it is. That's the real me. And that's who I truly am. And the person who did all those chataim, that doesn't reflect who I really am and who I want to be. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all right, I'll give you another chance. If that's the real you, then I will wipe away those things that you did that do not reflect who you truly are, who do not reflect your true essence. But if a person was sichli lagamre, and his sins were mitzad sichlo, then tshuva by definition would be impossible. Because you couldn't say that wasn't the real me. The real me is the person who wants to do the right thing. Because you always do exactly what you want to do. That's, the Maharal says, is the yesod of tshuva. So, the Maharal says, if a person is choti mitzad sichlo, not because they're overcome by their desires and their passions, but because they choose intellectually to do that which is wrong. Not that, like most of us, we want to do the right thing, but we are sometimes overcome and end up doing that which we don't really want to do, but rather mitzad sichleinu, we choose evil. So then tshuva is impossible, because you can't say that's not the real me anymore. I see there are questions. Let's just finish the yesod, and then I'll take the questions. So the Maharal says, based on that, we can understand what happened with Paro. Skipping down a couple lines. Uve medrash, Amar Rabbi Yochanan mikan peschoin pe'aleminin, lomar, lo haisa mimenu, shiasa tshuva, shenemar, ki ani echbadati es libo. Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, yistam piyam shal rishayim, elam leleitzim hu yalitz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu masra bo, ba'adam pa'am rishona, shniya v'shlishis, ve'eno chozer bo, v'hu noel libo min ha'tshuva, kidei lefor mimenu min ha'chet. Af kach, paro ha'rasha, kevan sheshigar HaKadosh Baruch Hu chamisha pa'amim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Paro 5 warnings. The first 5 plagues were without the hardening of his heart. V'lo yishgiach al dvarav, but he didn't listen. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, atayk sheisa arpecha v'ichbadet as libcha, hareini mosef v'latom al tumasecha. V'chol zeh, kasher hisra b'lo lashu v'lo lashuch, az hachet hazeh nechshav mitzad sichlo, v'shuv ein shuva l'davar zeh. Says the Maharal, once Paro had ignored the warnings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 plagues, and he didn't allow the Jewish people to go, he showed that the chataim were mitzad sichlo. It wasn't that he was overcome by passion or desire, but mitzad sichlo, this is what he wanted to do. He was given ample warning. He was shown nisim, and yet he saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu and spat in his face and tried to fight him and the like. It was mitzad sichlo. And memela, then tshuva was impossible. It's not like the Rambam that the tshuva was taken away as a punishment or allow him to, or for him to be punished. But by definition, tshuva is not possible for someone who sinned mitzad sichlo. Perhaps going forward it's possible. You could change your ways. But there's no way to eradicate the past when you've sinned mitzad sichlo, because eradicating the past is only when the sins did not reflect your seichel, they reflected your guf. Yes?
I'm trying to figure out when Rambam speaks about tshuva for hashkafas and deos fellows. So would that, that's not corresponding to seichel?
So, I don't know what the Maral would say or the Rambam would say, but what I would say is, but I don't think it has to be. What I'd say is, it's very simple. There's a very strong connection, as the Bali Musar all point out. Rabbi Yochanan's famous piece, and Rabbi Dessler talks about it, and many, and Rabbi Yisrael, that there is a very strong correlation between our deos and our opinions and our guf and our yetzer hara. And we have to acknowledge that. We are overcome by shochad. There's certain advantages that we see by having false beliefs, and therefore there are times when we choose those falsehoods, not because intellectually that is what makes the most sense, but because of shochad, because that's easier. There are defense mechanisms that our psyche employs to allow us to feel comfortable the way we are by believing things that, if we thought about it objectively, aren't true. And that's why we have Bechira in terms of our deos. Because if that weren't the case, then it would be very hard to understand how ever a person could be held accountable for their deos. So it's not so simple. In other words, mitzad seichel, mitzad guf doesn't just correspond to physical versus intellectual. Yes?
When we say Homer Echdabash of Ema speaking no one's is that because it's based in this Maral as an intellectual?
That's certainly a good way to explain it. I don't know if that's how the Maral would does explain it, but it's very mistaber. I think that's a beautiful pshat based on the Maral. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Sammy?
How did the Maral, meaning somebody uses their seichel at the time when they did the Aver, and their seichel at that point tells you that that's exactly the most important thing, but when they learn more, they realize that they were wrong.
It's a good question. I've wondered about that for the Maral. I'm not sure. It's possible that the Maral in that case might say that there isn't tshuva for those chataim. Or the Maral would say, no. In other words, that be'etzem isn't mitzat sichlo unless a person has chosen what they know to be wrong. So, I'm not sure. Okay. So that brings us to the conclusion of this question. And just as a conclusion for this topic of Bechira, I'd like to see two letters from Rav Huttner on both on the topic of Bechira, and both which convey very, very fundamental lessons. The first is a Igeres Tes on the left column of page 45. And this letter relates something that I know that when I first encountered it, I found shocking. We're all told that there is no such thing as a nisayon that a person can't handle. If a person is given a nisayon, it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yodea Machashavos, understands that this is something that we are strong enough and capable of passing. And Rav Huttner, as well as other thinkers, there's a letter of the Stipler where he says the same thing, points out that this is not always the case. A person might face a decision, face a struggle, in which they are incapable of making the right choice. This makes a lot of sense in light of our discussion last week about the Nekudas HaBechira. In that case, the Nisayon is not so much the choice that they're going to make, because based on their nature and their nurture or whatever it is, they don't really have a choice in a realistic sense. Theoretically they have it, but in a practical sense they don't. But rather, perhaps, how they respond to the choice that they make. For example, do they do tshuva or the like? But obviously a person would not be held accountable for a bad decision that they had no choice but to make. And thus, Rav Huttner was asked the following question. This is an idea that he said many times, and his students asked the following. A student. We'll start from the third line of the letter. B'malachim Aleph Perk Ches, the Pasuk says, Ki yachata'u lecha, ki ein adam asher yachata, lo yachata, v'anafta bam, v'nasatam lefnei uyev. This is a statement made during the inauguration of the first Beis HaMikdash during Shlomo's Tefillah, which was about, among other things, that the Beis HaMikdash should be a Makom Tefillah and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should listen to the Tefillos that were offered in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Pasuk says, when people sin, because after all, there is no person who can't sin, and you are angry at him, and you punish him. Asks this Talmud, we don't know his name, Chavivi Yikiri, V'al zeh incha kosev b'michtavcha, ki mipashtas halashon mashma, de'af ala chatayim, shem lamala min abechira yesh onesh, sherei mefurash, de'gam ala chatayim asher ein adam shelo yachta ne'amar v'anafta, v'davar zeh tamuahu beinecha. Your question is as follows. The Pasuk says that people will sin in a way that there was above their bechira. They had no choice but to sin. And you will punish them. And that doesn't make any sense. It's unjust. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu punish a person for a decision that they had no choice but to make? That's the question that he's out to answer. And he gives two answers. We're going to read the first. I recommend that you read the second as well. We'll start two lines up from the bottom. Da lecha chavivi. Ki osam hachatayim asher amnam lekushta demilsa nasim bekocho shel hachok she'ein adam tzadik ba'arts asher lo yachata mikol makom. Now we're on page 46. Hu lamala mikoach hasagaso shel ha'adam lahachlit eze mechata'av nasum bekoach bechiraso ve'eze mehen. I don't know. Mikafim al cheshbon ze shel ein adam ba'aretz asher legomer. The truth of the matter is that if a person sins, but they truly had no choice but to sin, so then in fact they would not be punished and they would not be held accountable for that sin. However, no person is able to say that. A person can never say, I had no choice but to sin. It is possible that when they do a certain action, they make a certain decision, that decision was made, as he says, begeder, ein adam tzadik b'artz asher lo yachata. It's possible. It's true. But you can never know that. You don't know that you had no choice but to sin. Perhaps if you would have struggled, if you would have pushed a little harder, you wouldn't have sinned. And therefore, since you can never know, umemela mechuyev hu v'omed l'sader l'atzmo seder tikunei tshuva al kol chatav. He has no choice but to do tshuva, because he doesn't know that that sin was committed l'mala mebechiraso. V'im hu poter es atzmo mitikunei tshuva, al yedei zeh shehu zokef es chata'av al cheshbon haklal she'ein adam tzadik baretz, harei afim lekushta demilsa hayu chata'im halalu lemala mikoach bechiraso bedin hu she'anesh alayam me'achar sheheder hatshuva mare pechisas madregaso beyiras chet. since a person doesn't know, so they're chayav to do tshuva. And if they don't do tshuva, that indicates a lack of awareness of the seriousness of a sin, in which case they are held responsible for that sin. Because they clearly do not see it as something problematic. Hare memela mukhrach sha'af al ha'chataim shalamalim b'chiraso lo nigrimu mitzad zeh shem lamalim in ha'b'chira ela shechisar niras ha'chet shalo hayagam ken b'yad olios gram alahem. And memela must be that part of his sin was in that chisar niras chet, and for that he's punished. So essentially, he's punished not for the sin itself, but for the lack of tshuva, which is a raya that the sin itself wasn't entirely, he wasn't entirely innocent of it. Skip a little bit. Ukemo kein chisaron hadaiga pen naasu achatayim bekoach habechira misalek ha hisnatzlo shel lemala min habechira afal pi shel amitan davar naasu hachatayim alalu bekoach shel lemala min habechira. Skipping a little, he brings a nice raya from the lashon of Shmona Esrei. We say baruch ata hayrotze b'tshuva. So he says, what does it mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu is rotze b'tshuva? He's not rotze b'tshuva. He doesn't want us to sin. The answer is no, because since there are certain sins that we have no choice but to commit, he's rotze b'tshuva. That's really what he asks of us. The nisayon isn't whether or not to sin. The nisayon is, are we going to do tshuva for that sin? Along similar lines, you could explain perhaps the notion that we find in Chazal, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created tshuva before the chet. What's the yesod? Maybe there wasn't going to be sin. After all, people had the free choice whether to sin or not sin. The answer is no. There's a type of chait for which there's no choice but to commit. And the question isn't whether they sin or not sin. The question is, how do they respond to that sin? This might relate to certain sources which indicate that perhaps even the chait of Adam and Chava, the chait of the Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa, was in a certain sense beyond Bechira, because of their limited Bechira at that point. The question was really not so much whether they were going to eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov HaRa, but whether they were going to respond. And the problem was not in the eating so in as much as the hiding and the denial, the initial denial that Adam and Chava did. So that's his answer. Yes.
Rav Putner,
you mean?
Yes.
I think that's basically what he is saying. The nisayon isn't the act. The nisayon is the response to the act.
That's what Hashem would do.
Yes, exactly. Clearly, like you're saying, it's not a game. Absolutely. Yes.
Why would the Ribono Shel Olam want the tshuva for something that you had no control?
It's not the tshuva per se. It's that the using what he pointed out, the nisayon is, are you going to do tshuva? The nisayon is the response. How do you respond? When I go ahead and I do some, l'mashal l'mad davar doma, a person goes ahead, rachmana litzlan, they're driving and they hit someone and they kill them. Totally be'onas. They were following the speed limit, they were alert, they were careful, but so that's something that's beyond their bechira. But if that person didn't feel bad, it wasn't my fault. So you'd say they're sick, right? Here, the point is the following. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants a person to be aware, to learn about the importance, the meaning of chait, the consequences of chait, etc. And that's the why he does this. Now, you have a very good question when you ask, why would a HaKadosh Baruch Hu ever send a person a nisayon which they can't pass? So we could say what you were saying, which is, be'etzem the nisayon isn't the initial nisayon, it's their response. There might be other answers. Maybe a HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, like we said, certain plans where certain things have to happen. This perhaps goes back to what we saw in the Ramban and the like. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has reasons why he would do this, why he would cause a person to act not freely, as it were. But then, that's not like now they're pater. And the question is, how do they respond? The final source, yes?
So how would we differentiate this with the Rashi and Kikaitse?
Which Rashi?
About the fact
that Eishas Yifas Toar is a different point, I believe. What Rashi there is saying, when he talks about Divratar Kenegad Yetzara, is not that this would be impossible, but on a simple level, there's more amkos, but on a simple level, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a choice. He could either say it's Aser, but many people would then be Nichshal, or he could say it's Mutter, and therefore legislate that it be done in the best possible way, or the way which causes the least harm or damage, and at the same time say, I'm permitting this not because I think it's a good idea, but because I'm trying to legislate to minimize the damage, but really you shouldn't do this. And that's not to say that a person has no freedom. A person has freedom whether he wants to be Boel and Eishas Yifas Toar or not. And thus HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you shouldn't do it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu also tells you what to do when it's done. It's just like L'mashal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a mitzvah V'heshef Esagzela, but that shouldn't be interpreted as a license to steal.
How would Rav Hutner say you were true in that case?
In which case?
It's not the Rambam's
true. In this type of fate? You don't know, is his point. A person sins. I don't know if I had no bechira or not. So I have to do tshuva the same way. I have charat al ha'avar because I regret that I did it. I have kabal al ha'asid because, and I say I'm not going to do it again. I have vidoy like I would for any other chait, because you never know. A person goes ahead and says, I couldn't not do this. You don't know. You don't know what you could have done or what you couldn't have done. And a person has no right to go ahead and start pottering themselves from all the chatan they did because they say, I didn't have any choice. Because you don't know. Person sometimes has more koach than he realizes. The last letter from Rav Hutner, this is on page 47, Mechtav Mem Beis, is a fascinating letter because it goes back to the yesod that we started with. We pointed out at the very beginning of our discussion that the notion of free will is something which is very much under attack. The truth of the matter is it's always been under attack. We've seen numerous challenges, the question of foreknowledge, the question of psukim and the like. But nowadays, perhaps more than any other time in human history, it is under attack. As I mentioned before, conventional wisdom in certain branches of academia is that there's no freedom. And this letter was written in Tafshin Chav Dalad, so it's pretty old. But Rav Hutner, and it wasn't what it was now then, Rav Hutner addresses this point in a fascinating way. He writes, starting from the second line, end of the line, Ki avi avos hatuma shel tkufasenu hu hazilzul betzuras ha'adam. The biggest problem we have in our generation is the lack of recognition of the dignity and greatness of man. What do scientists say? Not all, but many. What are we? We are no different than an animal, essentially. We're just more intelligent. But there's a spectrum of intelligence. We are further up along the line. We're more advanced. We're more evolved. But fundamentally, there is nothing unique about us. The low ode, Ela shiyesh bezeh sod amok. V'hinani bezeh limsor sa'inyan b'remiza. Hinei, Omek Yehuda shel Tzuras Adam, who bekoach habechira hatavua b'tzurazu. The uniqueness of man is expressed in his ability to freely choose. As we saw, the Rambam said, Hein ba'adam haya kechad mimenu, meaning to say, man is unique in that he's the only creation with freedom. We saw that's how the Meshech Chachma explained what Tzelem Elokim means. What distinguishes man more than anything else from all other creations is his Bechira. V'tichanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Torasenu ki be'acharis hayamim tivutal sgulas HaBechira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us in last week's Parsha that la'asid lavo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take away our Bechira. That's how the Ramban explains U'mal Hashem Elokechas levavcha. The Pasuk tells us that B'yamos HaMashiach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take away our Bechira. And thus, ubevadai, deina kavana bezeh de'al. So, just to jump ahead, he says, therefore, the closer we get to that period of time, we are getting closer and closer to the Mashiach, to the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be malas levavenu, and we will no longer have free will. So, memela, the denial of free will is going to become more and more and more strong. Because we are closer to that stage where in reality we won't have free will. And because we're closer to that, that's going to be denied. Now, he tells us a very important point. Lasid lavo, when we don't have bechira, it's not going to be because we are being coerced. Rather, it's because of the clarity that we're going to have. And therefore, one might have said, if what distinguishes humans from all other creations is their bechira, and they're going to lose bechira lasid lavo, so they're going to be monkeys. No. Adirabba. The lack of bechira that we're going to have lasid lavo will be a greatest manifestation of our humanity, because it won't be because we lack choice because we're coerced, but rather because the truth and goodness will be so clear to us. And to understand this, you have to look at the Ramban that he's quoting. The Ramban over there says that U'mal Hashem Elokechas Levavcha refers to the fact that Lasid Lavo B'mos HaMashiach, the truth will be so clear to us, like we say in the davening on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that Memela, there'll be no evil, and there'll be no desire to do evil. The choice to do good will come naturally. Right now, we live in a world where, like food, the food that is unhealthy, that's bad for us, is very attractive to us. It tastes good. We enjoy fatty foods and sweet foods and the like, though those are the foods that harm our body. We are attracted to that which harms us, and that's why we choose to sin. Lasid lavo, that which is healthy, that which is true, that which is right, is going to look good. That veneer of falsehood will be removed. That's why, by the way, if you look at the Ramban in Parshas Nitzavim, he says that the Madrega, La'asid Lava, when we lose Bechira, will be exactly the same as the Madrega of Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChet. Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChet, as we alluded to last time, using the Ramban's terminology, there was a world of Emes and Sheker. It wasn't a world of Tov Ra. The way the Nefesh HaChaim explains it, Ra was Michutz Mimenu, it wasn't Betocho. All of those ideas point to the same notion that nowadays we live in a world of erbuvia, a world of confusion, and that is what allows us to have this bechira. So lasid lavo, it's going to be clear. It's not that be'etzem we won't have bechira. The raya is that Adam HaRishon be'etzem had bechira, v'haraya, he chose what was wrong. But rather the pshat is that the lack of clarity will make the choice, the clarity will make the choice obvious to us. So says Rav Hutner, u'bevadai de'ena kavana bezeh de'al yedei milas Arlas Halev Tivutal Tzuras Adam. Don't say, if the Tzuras Adam is based on his Bechira, so don't say that the lack of Bechira will mean a bitl Tzuras Adam. Ki silaka Bechira haba betor tolda meha his atzmus koach haBechira. Eino ele gilui skulas haBechira. The lack of Bechira will be a gilui skulas haBechira. Afal pi shebefo amamish botla ha-hishdamshos b'koach ha-bechira. Ve'adirabah, silach ha-bechira zeh, mofia hu dafka kisi ha-pisga shel nisgavus ha-bechira. So, the lack of bechira will be a reflection of the greatness of man. Aval mikevan shesof sof omedes hi ha-bechira lihisbatel, since l'maisa bechira is omedes lihisbatel, harei, Hakfira hayoser smuchal achras hayamim hi hakfira beskulas habechira shalat. Memela, the kfira that's going to dominate beachras hayamim is a kfira in bechira. Asher mikfira zu novea kol hazilzul betzuras adam shel tkufasenu. It's from that kfira that is the basis of the zilzul betzuras adam that is rampant in our era. And it's a fascinating insight, really an amazing insight, that it's really MS, that at the root of the Zilzul Adam, which is the basis for, in a certain sense, all of the kfiros in our world, is that bittul. In, yes?
I don't really understand exactly how, if kfira, it's because I don't understand, if kfira is
because it came about through a understanding of the truth. Lamashal, let's take the approach of Rav Dessler in the Nekudas HaBechira. So a person who is born, or when he becomes bar mitzvah, struggles with a particular thing, right? Struggles whether to daven shacharis or not. That's what he struggles with when he's 13. Some days he daven shacharis, some days he doesn't daven shacharis. And he goes ahead, and through his Bechira Chavshis, makes good choices and works on it and learns, and he reaches a madrega by the time that he's 15, 16, the davening shacharis is natural. He doesn't ever think about skipping shacharis. Now he's struggling with different things. Should he daven with a minion or not with a minion? But he always davens. He always puts on tefillin. It's not even a shail anymore. So he doesn't, theoretically, still has Bechira, but practically doesn't have Bechira for Shachris anymore. But that's not a Pchisos in his greatness. Adirab, it's a reflection, because he reached a higher Madrega, what originally was unclear has now become Pashat, and therefore he does it naturally. So the lack of Bechira that will have L'Asid Lava is along those lines. And that's why it could only come about after there's a world of Bechira. Okay, in terms of the source books, on page 48 through 50, we're not going to do this now because we already spent a lot of time on this topic, but the Mishnah already in Pirkei Avos, Perek Gimel, deals with, at least according to some Mefarshim, the question of Yedi and Bechira. Hakol Tzafoi Verushus Nesuna, on the one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the future, on the other hand, we have freedom. And if you look here, there's a collection of Mefarshim, the Rambam, Rav Avadya, Rav Chasdai Kreskes, the Sefer Ikrim, the Ramban, the Maral, who deal with this question and in the context of their discussion with the Mishnah. So if this is something that further interests you, Ayin Sham. To summarize what we've done, since we've really spent a lot of time on this topic, most of the topics that we do this year, Bezos Hashem, we will not spend this much time on. But what I've tried to do in this topic, and Bezos Hashem, what we'll continue to do in the other topics, is study and see Mekoros, and see a range of Mekoros. We saw philosophers, we saw the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim, but we also saw Reb Tzadok, and et cetera, et cetera. And I remember last year, somebody asked me, who was in the Shir, he asked me, why is it that in the Shir we do things topically, as opposed to, the way he asked the question was, in universities, philosophy is usually studied by the thinker. So why don't we learn Rambam, and then learn Ramban, and then learn Reb Tzadok, and then learn Maral, etc. So I think practically this way, I'm not saying that's a bad way, maybe it would be better, but I chose to do it this way because practically it shows us the nuances in each position. We're able to see the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban about Bechira much better when we study them in proximity than if we'd study them, you know, we do the Rambam on Bechira XYZ, and then we do the Ramban on Bechira XYZ. But even more so, and this is the Iker Teretz, that it emphasizes Kulam Meiroa Echad. The Gemara in Chagiga says that while there are many machlokos, but ultimately we believe Kulam Meiroa Echad. And Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to learn a sugya. It's just like when you learn Bav Metzia this year. You're not going to say, okay, I'm going to first learn the Masechta according to Rashi. Go straight through. And then I'm going to learn the Masechta like Tosfos. And then the Rambam and then the Ramban. Right? I don't think anyone learns that way. You get to the first sugya, and if you're planning to do Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rambam, Ramban, and Ritva, so you do that then. And then you go to Daf Beis Amud Beis, and you do the same thing. So, and Be'emes, that's what we're doing, because we're trying to come to the Emes, to the best of our ability. And the best way to do that is to learn the sugya. And just like when you learn a sugya in Shas, you learn that sugya, and you learn all the mefarshim on that sugya, the Rishonim and the Achronim, etc. And likewise, when you learn a sugya in Tanakh, that's how you do it. So too, when you learn a sugya in Machshava, that's, I think, at least in our context, the best way to do it. So that is, to answer that question, that's why we do it. So I want to wish you all a Gemar Chasim HaTayva, a good Gemensh Tiyar, a good Yantif, a good Shabbos. Be'ezras Hashem, we pick up right after Sukkos. And the next shiur, the next topic we're going to do is what I call the Hakdama. We're going to talk about why we learn Machshava, what its purpose is, what we're trying to get. And so we'll start that next time. The Makoros, if you want to look ahead, are in the same packet that you have already, starting from page 51. Going to page 65. Kol Tov. Shabbos. Shabbos.